Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Monday, April 23rd, day number 114 of 2012. And tonight, we're going to be touching base with my good friend Jorge Ponce. Jorge wrote an article recently about the Bay of Pigs. Can you believe 51 years ago, the 51st anniversary of the Bay of Pigs? And we'll be getting a little bit into that. It was a very interesting article. And we're also going to talk about repression in Cuba, which just seems to be going in the wrong direction. So Jorge Ponce, our good friend, contributor to the Babalu blog, is going to be joining us here in just a second. On this day in history, a couple of interesting things. In 1564, we say happy birthday to William Shakespeare. I never really got into Shakespeare. That was not one of my strengths or one of my real interests when I was in school. But he was obviously a great writer. And I do enjoy, actually, watching the plays, I'll say that much. I enjoy watching the plays more than I do reading them. And Julius Caesar, of course, Romeo and Juliet, a masterpiece. Merchant of Venice is also a very interesting one. So happy birthday to Mr. William Shakespeare. I guess he would be 448 years old today. If he had a birthday party, that's a lot of candles. Also on this day, if you're a baseball fan, and I am, on this day in 1954, Henry Aaron hit his first home run, the first of 756. He hit it against the Cardinals. Of course, Henry Aaron started out with the Milwaukee Braves. You know, I didn't know this, but he was the last Negro League player to play in the major leagues. Obviously, when Jackie Robinson broke the color line in 1947, you know, from 1947 to 1954, there were quite a few other black players who made it to the major leagues, like Jackie Robinson, Larry Doby, obviously Willie Mays, who by that time was already a superstar. But Henry Aaron, on this day in 1954, hit his first home run. And I don't care how many home runs Bobby Bonds hit, as far as I'm concerned, Henry Aaron is the all-time home run king. We're going to take a break. We'll hear from our sponsor, and then we've got Jorge Ponce on the other side.
The Canto Group is a recruiting firm located in Dallas, Texas that specializes in the placement of executives and engineering professionals with companies throughout Texas and Mexico. If your company is seeking quality candidates in the fields of general managers, plant managers, sales, CFOs, or controllers with a manufacturing background, production managers and supervisors, engineering specializing in mechanical manufacturing, industrial, electrical, safety, or quality engineers, or designers and drafters, feel free to contact our team regarding your company's future or current openings. Call Silvio Canto Jr. at 214-483-9505. Email the Canto Group at AOL.com or visit our website, thecantogroup.com.
This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, and we're getting some feedback there. Let's see. Is that, could that be you, Jorge? Let's try that one more time. Yes, is that you? I think so. Well, we're
going to
ask,
me.
Can you hear me okay, or is that a feedback on your side?
It's a feedback on my side. I can hear you perfectly.
Okay, I think we're okay now. Well, we're still getting it. I tell you what, why don't you, do you mind calling in? Why don't you,
all right.
redial the number, and we'll wait for you. It shouldn't take you that long to do it. But anyway, Jorge Ponce, once in a while, of course, we have technical problems, but we always have good people like Jorge Ponce who can call back. You know, I'm going to be writing a blog tomorrow talking about a couple of stories in the news today. Of course, number one is what just happened in France, where they had an election, and at least in the first round, the left won the first round. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to win the second round, because the real tiebreaker in this election is going to be the people who voted for the right, which is like 20%. You know, they have these multi-party elections where the winner gets 30% of the vote. I hate those kinds of systems, by the way. That's why I love about the American Electoral College, because, you know, you don't have these presidents being elected with 33% of the vote. But anyway, it's a consequential election, and the markets today didn't react real well to the news from France, because I think there's a lot of concern that this election in France is sort of a, if you will, sort of a sign that the people in Europe are not ready to tighten their belts. So we'll keep an eye on that election in France. Also, another very interesting, while we wait for Jorge to check in, another very interesting column today in the New York Times by the public editor of the New York Times, basically, you know, accepting a little bit of blame for the fact that the New York Times maybe has been a little bit too positive on Obama rather than critical. Let's say hello to Jorge. How are you, Jorge?
Hey, how you doing?
Just fine. We got you just great this time. I appreciate your calling me back. I don't know what happened there, but every once in a while, you know, the cables don't work. So that's why we gotta try it for a second time. Well, Jorge, of course, you're a contributor to the Babalu blog, and that's how we first made contact with you back in October or November when we did our first interview. I thought maybe you could just give us a little story about Jorge. I know you've been on our show before, but I always assume there may be some new listeners who may not be familiar with your story, Jorge. So take a minute and tell us about yourself.
Yes, I am a proud Cuban-American, growing up in the Washington, D.C. area, primarily in Northern Virginia, and have worked for the federal government practically my entire career, and married to a Cubana, and have a son. And I do my contribution regularly to the Cuban cause by using my pen prolifically to write multiple op-eds and letters to the editors.
Excellent. And, of course, you write for the Babalu blog, or you're one of the many contributors to the Babalu blog, and I think you would agree with me that that's the one blog that dominates, let's say, the distribution of Cuban-American opinions. It's quite a blog.
Absolutely. When it comes to Cuban-American matters, Unfiltered, that is a place to click on.
Absolutely. We certainly recommend it to everybody. Alberto de la Cruz, of course, is the managing editor, and we've had him on the show several times. But you wrote, speaking of the Babalu blog, you wrote a great article about the 51st anniversary, and that doesn't seem possible. I guess it shows we're all getting too old, if nothing else. But 51 years since the Bay of Pigs, and I want to get into a little bit of that with you, you know, and what does the Bay of Pigs mean to people like you and I who grew up in the United States, maybe some of the legacy, some of the consequences, maybe some of the individuals who were on that mission. Be interesting to know what they're doing now. But let's begin. I want to get your thoughts on this, Jorge. There is a really bad wave of depression in Cuba. And there has always been repression in Cuba, but it's gotten pretty nasty lately. What is your take on that? What do you think is going on down there?
Well, I think that the Cuban authorities are petrified of the things that have taken place recently in the Middle East. I think that the fact that they realized that the Arab Springs was generated and triggered by cell phones. They're very much afraid of any electronic equipment that Cubans have, and this would explain why they sentence the USA American hostage Alan Gross to 15 years simply because he was handing out laptops and cell phones to the small Jewish community. So that's one explanation. The other explanation is that they were also very concerned that the world community was going to be exposed to the Cuban dissident movement when Pope Benedict visited Cuba last month.
Yeah. Well, those are two very good reasons. I mean, they're clearly afraid of cell phones, and my understanding is that there are quite a few cell phones in Cuba in the hands of dissidents, and sometimes these cell phones go into Cuba through friendly tourists who simply drop off the phone, and then they can be loaded up with minutes here in Florida, that kind of thing. So it is an avenue for conversation with what's happening in Cuba. But, you know, I have to confess, I was disappointed that Pope Benedict did not meet with these ladies in white, the Damas en Blanco. I thought that would have been a fairly effective step on the part of the Pope to legitimize what I think is one of the great human stories of our lifetime, really, which is these ladies in white. I mean, what a great story that is.
Well, I think that it was a missed opportunity by the Pope, and when it came time to siding with the freedom fighters and the human rights dissidents, the Pope opted to side with the oppressors, similar to the posture that the Catholic Church took when Hitler was around.
Well, yeah, I mean, I hate to say it, but you're exactly right. It you know, when the Pope travels, Jorge, he's not just a head of state. It's not like, you know, the president of Italy went to Cuba, or the president of Albania, or the president of Mexico, or the president of Argentina. When the Pope travels, he is really, well, he's the head of state, but he's also the head of the Catholic Church. So there's a religious element to his visit, and I was very disappointed that more didn't happen. Maybe it will. Maybe the Pope, maybe there's a secret strategy there that I'm missing, but I was disappointed. But let's talk about your article on the Bay of Pigs, Jorge. And again, this article was on the Babalu blog, and if you we're going to put a link to it in the show information, so you can click to it and read it right on our show information. But 51 years, I mean, that is a long time. And what that means, that I'm going to guess that most of the men of the famous Brigade 2506, many of them, Jorge, have probably died. Do you have any information on how many are still alive, and any information like that of a personal nature on these men?
I do know that that there is quite a number who have passed away. I mean, I had a personal friend of mine who took part in the invasion, Manuel Alonso. Naturally older than I am, but he passed away, and many of them have passed away of natural causes. There are some who committed suicide out of frustration that after so long that Cuba remain a country oppressed by a totalitarian communist regime. Very sad, because Silvio, that you know, when you take part in a military campaign, most of the folks who take part in those campaigns suffer from just psychological and mental illnesses when they come back to join the civilian corps?
Well, many do, of course. Battle, war is a very difficult thing. But I think there's also a difference between the soldier who comes back in victory and the soldier who comes back in defeat, or in this case, a soldier who comes back because he was basically let down. I mean, I happen to be of the opinion that they were let down. I mean, these men thought that they were going to be supported, and all of a sudden they found out when they hit the beach that there was not going to be the support that they thought they were going to get. And I think that has to be crushing to you. And then for these men to be basically exchanged for farm supplies and tractors and so on, that had to be very humiliating for most of them. Because, I've seen many interviews with these men, and every one of them was convinced that the operation was going to be a success. I mean, they all thought they were on a mission to liberate Cuba. You know, sometimes the left has tried to depict these men as mercenaries and just a bunch of people who were doing it for the money. Not at all. Not one person that I've met who was a member of that brigade did it for that reason. They all did it because they wanted to change Cuba. So it had to be very frustrating the way it turned out and the way they came back to the United States. And as you indicated, you know, all that time, Cuba continues to be a repressive state. But Jorge, what really amazes me is, why did you write this article? What inspired you, a Cuban-American like me, who obviously was too young to go through all of this directly? Obviously, we had family that went through it. But what inspired you to get into this topic, Jorge?
Well, there are three things that inspire me to write this article. The first one is that I was 7 years old. I was in Cuba at the time when the Bay of Pigs took place. And what I remember of the Bay of Pigs is kind of a feeling of letdown, because on April 17th, it was my birthday, and I couldn't have a big celebration because the invasion was going on. And my parents were convinced that the Bay of Pigs participants were going to win and restore democracy to Cuba. And, of course, they were let down. So I felt like, hey, you know, the Cuban-Americans who took part in the invasions were let down. They were betrayed. And I, as a small child, was let down because I was promised, well, when they win, then we're going to have a big celebration for a free Cuba, and also to make it up for you, because you couldn't have a birthday party.
Right.
So that was one thing. That was one factor for why I wrote it. The second factor, Silvio, is that it bothers me a great deal when I talk to individuals who are not Cuban-Americans, and they kind of put down the Cuban-Americans by saying that when the chips are down, rather than stay in Cuba and fight the government forces, a lot of the Cubans decided to vote with their feet and go to Miami. And I always bring back the Bay of Pigs invasion, because to me the Bay of Pigs restore the manhood to the Cuban cause. When you take into consideration, for example, that there were 1,400 Cuban exiles who fought bravely during the invasion, and they were up against 51,000 of Castro troops, and yet they inflicted losses of 20-1 against a Soviet-trained Cuban army. So as far as the Cuban Americans who took part in the Bay of Pigs invasion, I mean, we deserve to give them our respect and admirations and kudos for a job well done. Had they not been betrayed,
right,
they would have prevailed, and there was an officer who lives here in the area by the name of Oliva. Oliva was one of the head officers for the Cuban Americans, and he was magnificent, and he made us very proud. And the third thing, and final thing that led me to write the article, is that when it came time to put together the teams who were going to take part in the invasion, the main concern, the main factor for putting together the teams was that they were looking for people, primarily Cuban Americans, who were advocates for restoring democracy to Cuba. And they embraced this big tent mentality that if you were for the restoration of democracy in Cuba, you could be a member of this brigade. And it did not matter your political affiliation, whether you were a Democrat or whether you were a Republican, whether you were white or whether you were Afro-Cuban, whether you were straight or whether you were gay, did not matter. It was all one big family, one big tent. And that, Silvio, is what I hope will happen when democracy is finally restored to Cuba, that we have to be an inclusive society where there is room for every Cuban and every person of any nationality that is interested in restoring prosperity to Cuba.
Absolutely. Those are three very good reasons. I was going to say one point about the fact that Cubans left Cuba. Because I've heard that too. I've heard that too from people who will say, well, gee, you know, why didn't you stay and fight? Well, by the time we left, which would have been 64, it was very difficult. I mean, you were basically fighting a government with MiGs and Soviet tanks. It was at that point a very difficult fight. But yet, despite that, many men went into the Escambray, the mountains, and still fought against all odds against the Castro regime. So, I mean, the bravery was always there, but, of course, it was a lot more difficult. The Bay of Pigs was really the first opportunity to get rid of Castro. The second one may have been the missile crisis. I suppose Kennedy could have said, not only are the missiles leaving, but he's leaving too. Castro is leaving too. But, you know, it didn't work out that way, and history is what it is. And people like you and I celebrate every year the anniversary of the Bay of Pigs, remembering the honor of these great men. As I said, I've had the opportunity, Jorge, to speak to some of them, and you walk away with a sense, on one hand, you feel bad for them because you know they were let down. But then on the other hand, these were the very brave Cubans, like you say, who were motivated by one thing and one thing only, and that was restoring democracy to Cuba. Let me ask you a question that some people have asked me, and I've asked myself sometimes the same question. Why did they send these men if they knew they were not going to support him? Or did, I guess the other question would be, did President Kennedy convey to these men that they were going to be supported? Or was it, as many people try to do, many apologists for Kennedy try to say, well, he really didn't know, it was a CIA. To the best of your knowledge, what happened? You know, why were these men left at the Bay of Pigs to basically be forced to surrender eventually?
Well, the biopics took place shortly after John Kennedy reached the White House. He had only been in he had only been president in the White House for a couple of months, and the legwork as far as the putting together the logistical arrangements, as well as all the intelligence, had been done by Eisenhower government officials. And I guess that John Kennedy had a change of heart. He thought that it would be too provoking to the Soviets to launch an invasion. Now, here is a point, Silvio, that if Kennedy changed his mind and would have said that he wanted to stop the invasion, if he had done that, I would say that
but history, that's his prerogative. That's his prerogative.
History would have judged him better.
I agree. I agree with you.
The majority of the Cuban Americans would have disliked the decision, but they would have accepted it because, like you said, it is his prerogative as president. What is unforgivable is that he changed his mind once the Cubans had landed on a beachhead in Cuba. And as a result of that, there were many Cuban casualties that were completely unnecessary. And that's why, the Cuban Americans judge President Kennedy so harshly. Not because he changed his mind. That was his prerogative, but because he changed his mind when the Cubans had landed in Cuba, and as a result, they were in harm's way, and many of them die as a result.
Well, not only that, you're exactly right in your analysis, but not only that, I would add something else. Because it failed, because the Bay of Pigs failed as it was originally planned, that also created a tremendous wave of repression in Cuba. And one of the men who was arrested in that wave of repression that followed the Bay of Pigs was my dad's cousin, who spent the next 14 years in a political prison. So a lot of Cubans because there were many people within Cuba who were ready to rebel. In some cases, they rebelled because they thought that this was this invasion was part of a larger plan. And many of those Cubans ended up later being executed, being put in prison. There was a wave of repression. So, the casualties, as you say, were unnecessary. But I guess at the end of the day, I never really understood why he changed his mind after the invasion. I think you're exactly right. If he had changed his mind, let's say, on the 16th of April and said, no, we're not going. I'm not going to support this invasion. I think you're right. Some of us would have said, gee, why is he doing that? But at the end of the day, by doing it the way he did it, it was a lot worse than had he changed his mind the day before. But obviously, for people like you and I, Jorge, who were the kids who came to the United States, on one hand, we came here to some extent because the Bay of Pigs didn't work. Had the Bay of Pigs worked, who knows? We would have stayed in Cuba. Who knows what would have been our future? But I think it's important, Jorge, for you and I and people of our generation to pass on to our kids at least the recognition that these were brave men who were with high ideals, and that they should be remembered as brave men with high ideals. That's what I try to do with my sons. I'm assuming you do the same with your son.
I do the same thing with my son and the Cuban Americans who took part in the Bay of Pigs invasions. I have taught my son that they were, and they are, the best that Cuban Americans have to offer. And one more thing that I wanted to touch on. There were three betrayals, Sylvia. Not one. Three. The first one was when President Kennedy reneged on giving the crucial air support. That was the first one, which was critical, because the tide was turned when the Cuban Air Force just attacked the Cuban Americans. The second betrayal is when the Cuban Americans POWs were brought back to the United States. President Kennedy had a ceremony in Miami where he promised to restore the Cuban flag to a free Cuba. That was the second betrayal. That never happened. And the third betrayal was during the Cuban Missile Crisis a year later, when he made a secret oral pact with Soviet Premier Nikita Khrushchev not to allow the Cuban Americans to launch any future invasions. And so one of the things that I ask myself, and that I have people ask me, will there be a second Bay of Pigs invasion? And to that, I respond that there is a possibility. And, you know, I get this just dismay from them. And I tell them, hey, listen, Fidel Castro refused to pay Russia the approximate $28 billion that the Soviet Union lent to Cuba. And Fidel's reasoning was that he didn't have to pay it back because he owed that money to a country that no longer existed. And so my argument is that there is a possibility here, because that oral agreement that President Kennedy made with Soviet Premier Nikita Khrushchev was made to a head of state of a country that no longer exists.
Interesting.
So that oral agreement is no longer binding.
Right. No, you're right. It's an interesting
using
point.
Using Fidel's logic, yes, there is a possibility that we could launch a second Bay of Pigs invasion. Now, is it going to happen? Well, let me throw some things at you. You know, we helped the Egyptians during the Arab Spring. We helped the dissidents in Libya. It is shameful that we have not helped the Iranians.
Right, I'm with you there.
Part in the Green Revolution, and it
right.
is shameful that we have not helped out the Syrians. Cuba is only 90 miles away. You know, you had a spy in the U.S. intelligence from Puerto Rico, Ana Belén Montes, who confused the Department of Defense, the Pentagon officials, by saying that Cuba was no longer a threat to the United States. She is behind bar because she was apprehended right before 9/11, or shortly after 9/11. And I think that looking at what's happening in the global scene, Cuba is right in the middle of all the trouble that it's been going on in South America, from Hugo Chavez to in Venezuela to Evo Morales in Bolivia to Ortega in Nicaragua, and even those where the Cuban government officials have not been involved, they have been following his lead, like in Ecuador. and even Argentina. So this whole issue that Cuba is no longer a threat to the United States is flawed.
That's right.
And if we have helped the Arab countries, we better take care of our own backyard.
Right. And of course, that could very well happen. Who knows? Who knows about the future? But Jorge, I want to thank you very much for joining us tonight and sharing your perspectives on the Bay of Pigs and the great article that you wrote. And as I'm saying to the listeners, I have a link to that article on the show information where it says guest. You can just click on Jorge's name and it'll take you to the article. But Jorge, it's always a pleasure to touch base with you, and we'll do it. We'll do it again. We have a show pending, as you know, around the 20th of May, which would be Cuban Independence Day. So we need to figure out something for that. But we'll talk probably at the end of May about that topic of Cuba again. But again, my pleasure and my thanks to you for joining us, and have a good evening with your family in the East Coast.
Thank you, Silvio.
All right. We're going to take a little break, and good night, Jorge, and we will be we'll be back right after this. Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Monday, April 23rd. We just had a fascinating chat there with Jorge Ponce, my good friend from the East Coast, fellow Cuban-American and contributor to the Babaloo blog, and we were talking about the Bay of Pigs. I can't tell you the number of times that I've spoken with my parents about the Bay of Pigs. It was, we often talk about it, particularly around this time of the year when we celebrate an anniversary, because the Bay of Pigs impacted just about every Cuban, whether you were one of the men who was in the mission, obviously their families, whether you were obviously one of the families that suffered a casualty because of the Bay of Pigs, or whether you ended up in prison, like my dad's cousin, because of the Bay of Pigs. The Bay of Pigs impacted Cuba in ways that I think we're still coming to terms with, and I know many Cubans have a real hurt over the Bay of Pigs. And I thought Jorge's analysis of President Kennedy was very interesting, because, you know, I've tried to understand why President Kennedy did what he did. I've never been able to come up with a logical explanation. He was a new president. Ironically, during the debates with Nixon, if you go back and you watch those debates, and they're available, some of them in YouTube, others in many libraries. I remember when I was going to college that I just rented, they were LPs back then, and I just rented the LPs and listened to the Kennedy-Nixon debates as they related to Cuba. I mean, they had a lot of other topics, obviously, in those debates, but as they related to Cuba, and there's no question that President, or at the time, Senator Kennedy, took a very hard policy toward Cuba during those debates. I mean, it's right there in the debates. All you got to do is listen to it. So I think a lot of Cubans probably felt even more surprised about the betrayal, again, because of what they had heard John Kennedy say during those debates. I've never understood why he made the decision. I'm sure he probably wished he hadn't, because the Bay of Pigs made not only the missile crisis possible, but it presented John Kennedy as a very weak president. And when he got together with Nikita Khrushchev in Vienna at the end of May, by all accounts, that meeting didn't go very well, and the Russians just couldn't understand how the president of the United States would allow something in their own sphere of influence to go communist. They just couldn't understand why Kennedy did that. And I found it interesting when I read part of a book about Nikita Khrushchev, and reading a little bit about that time and how surprised the Russians were that we didn't intervene. I mean, to them, they couldn't understand why they couldn't intervene, and that's why they had the perception that President Kennedy was weak. But anyway, we always look back, with mixed emotions at the Bay of Pigs, because we know there are some great men who were in that mission, and some of those men are getting older. And most of them right now, I mean, it's 51 years ago, so if you were 20 in that mission, you're now in your early 70s. And some of the men, obviously, were older than that. Some of them are probably in their mid-80s, late 80s right now. And obviously, life expectancy is catching up with them. So good chat there with my good friend Jorge Ponce about the Bay of Pigs and the 51st anniversary of the Bay of Pigs. Just a quick note, tomorrow night we're going to be talking with Alan Wall. Alan is a blogger, political analyst. He writes a great deal about the situation in Mexico. They have elections in Mexico this year, so we'll be talking a little bit about that, and we'll be talking about some of the other stuff going on in Mexico tomorrow night with Alan Wall. So I hope you can join us for that, because it's fascinating. Every time that I have Alan on the show, I get a lot of messages from listeners saying that they had a lot of fun listening to Alan Wall. Once again, on this day in history, I'm fascinated with this one because I'm a baseball fan. On this day in history, Henry Aaron hit his first home run back in 1954. Hammering Hank, as they used to call him. And I remember when we first came to the United States, I remember having one of those Milwaukee Braves, Henry Aaron, baseball cards. Milwaukee Braves, of course, had Eddie Matthews and Henry Aaron, Warren Spahn, quite a few great players who were a part of that Milwaukee Braves team. And we ended up in Wisconsin. You know, when we first came to the United States, we ended up in Wisconsin. So that's where the Milwaukee Braves used to be. So I always was a great admirer of Henry Aaron, who I still think is number one on the list. I know Bobby Bonds passed him, but I don't know. I want to believe that Henry Aaron is number one on that list, because there was a little controversy with Barry Bonds, but there was no controversy whatsoever with Henry Aaron. He did hit all 756 home runs, and he did it the right way. Everybody have a great day. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later. And we're going to go out tonight with a little Spanish music, that somebody sent me this file. And if you listen to it, it's pretty good guitar, pretty good Spanish guitar. And one of the things I always love to do is listen to music of Spanish guitar. So if you like Spanish guitar, you're going to like this one. Good night, everybody.